This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. This episode is an excerpt from my public access TV show, Talk with TQ. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, welcome back. And as always, I promise to have the most interesting guests I can find on the planet, because I know that you want it interesting. I really do it for my audience. Thank you for coming back. Today, I have a really great guest, and I'm going to be transparent on this. She's semi-family to me. I found out about a book that she wrote, and her name is Patricia A. Boswell. She wrote a book called Caregiving with Love and Joy. Now, I'm not surprised when I think in retrospect of what I know about Patricia. Patricia Boswell was my father's first cousin's daughter's babysitter. And so she was caregiving way back then. And now fast forward, she's a full-grown adult and she's written a book about caregiving. I just made that connection because I know I was a lousy babysitter, you know, so I would never admit that I was a lousy babysitter on the air, but I heard you were a fun babysitter from what I hear. Patricia, welcome to the show, first of all. And please tell me, why did you decide to write this book?
The reason I decided to write this book is because when I went back into the health field in 2008, I couldn't believe after 20 years that nothing had changed in the way people were caring for folks, especially at home too, that there wasn't enough education about how to care for someone, if whether they were home or even how to advocate or manage someone in a facility, whether it was a nursing home or rehab. They just didn't know what to say, what to do, what the questions should be, how to utilize social workers. They were just like floundering around to me as far as how to care. And the person that was suffering was the person that needed the care. So that's how I really took it to another level. When I went back in 2008, I wasn't sure if I was going to stay in the health field. But then as I continued to progress in it over a 2 to 3 month period, I had an opportunity to be hired as a hospice nurse and to be trained. And I actually liked hospice. So then I winded up staying longer in the business along with all my other businesses. So I am in the healthcare business now for 14 years with home care and hospice. And my specialty is Alzheimer's, dementia, hospice, and just general home care, case management, and consulting on that too.
So I know that your credentials are really impressive. You're an LPN and you also have an MBA. And when I was looking at the book and I was looking to see like what your credentials were, I thought that was a very interesting combination of credentials. And you actually address it in the beginning of the book. And maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Right. I initially went to Bronx Community to be an RN, as I mentioned in the book, that I had relatives that were nursing. And, you know, when you have nurses and teachers, that sometimes that's what you follow suit. But then I recognized that I really enjoyed business. So as I always say, I use business and nursing and business, because you're always assessing and observing. And in business, I do that where most people aren't doing that. And then you also, in business, you have to advocate too. So you learn that from nursing. And then in business, I learned to be, because I have an operations background, you got to put operations and processes in place, which I find the health field doesn't always have. So it's a great, you're right, it's a great combination. And I use it every day because I like to keep in mind that I'm not going to work crazy. It doesn't make sense to work crazy. There's always better ways of doing something to make it, not that it's easier, but it makes more sense on how you can think, feel, and have success at the same time and be a leader in whatever you're doing.
So how long have you been involved with caregiving for people with Alzheimer's?
I would say probably the whole 14 years.
So you just kind of went right in feet first, it sounds like.
Well, what happens is when you're doing hospice, you wind up being involved with people that have dementia, because that's one of the diagnoses that allows you to go on hospice is Alzheimer's. So I was being a case manager and also a critical care end-of-life hospice nurse, because not only was I doing the case management, but when people get to the end of life, there's a period of maybe a week or two that they really need critical care, assessment and observation, and working with the family with bereavement and all the other things that go in hand with end of life. So I got to see a lot of different situations of home care and end of life. And a lot of the patients were, I wouldn't say a lot, but it was a good balance with Alzheimer's. And then also working in the facilities, you have more Alzheimer's patients. So I had the opportunity to also manage that. So that's why I saw that there was a lot of different things going on in people's lives that had to do with caring for people with Alzheimer's. And then also there's certain things that you might, you know, situations that you might be in that you can use certain techniques with other diseases too, as far as caring for someone. So some of it's genetic, you know, and some of it, you know, is organic. Some of it is, this is the way you do it. So that's the one thing about caregiving. It has a lot of different dynamics dealing with the situation, but I felt like with Alzheimer's, people really did not understand the disease. And there's just in the United States, there's 6 million people with the disease right now. And there's over 11 million people that are caregivers that really do not have a good understanding how to work with the disease. They sort of fall into the situation and it becomes very stressful.
So I know that a lot of people lump dementia. I know many people lump dementia under one umbrella of Alzheimer's, but that's not the case. There are different types of dementia. Now, what I liked about the book, and I'm going to tell the audience this, because I would bet dollars to donuts that most people know somebody that suffers or knows of someone who suffers from dementia. Many of us have had to deal with it head on, you know, with a loved one. Now, in the book, you have a chapter that actually talks about you kind of lace it through the book a bit to recognizing the signs of dementia. Because I have to say personally that my grandmother had dementia. I didn't recognize the signs until it was too late.
Right. And one of the things about the signs, well, there, when you say dementia or Alzheimer's, most people have Alzheimer's. Eventually, that's what you see. But a lot of the signs are very dissimilar, no matter what the dementia is in the beginning. You know, the fact that someone can't find their keys, but then it's not that they can't find their keys, but they don't know what to do with their keys. Or they're lost. You know, they're becoming forgetful about little things. So if you're living with the person, you're probably going to see it more. But if you're not living with the person, you're talking to the person on the phone, you're not going to see it right away. I've noticed that over and over. So probably if you aren't visiting and spending a certain amount of time on your visits with your grandmother, you weren't going to see it until you were actually talking to her. And she called you one day and then she called you back in the afternoon and didn't remember that she spoke to you, or she called you and she's still talking about the same situation that she talked to you in the morning. That's a good sign. Or if you visited her and she's a very organized person, you start seeing post-its on the wall with people's numbers in a certain spot that tells you that's a certain situation where, okay, this person put one or two post-its, but when you start seeing 30 post-its, that's telling you something there too.
What should that tell a person when you see something like that?
That you need to be more investigative about their living situation and what they're doing when you're not there. Or if a particular person is actually how should I say, other family members are going in too. What are they seeing when they have a particular visit? Because they might be seeing something different. And if you're comparing notes, you might be able to put it all together. But saying so-and-so is just getting old is not a situation. That's not correct. Because there's a lot of people in their 90s and that are 100 that do not have dementia. So it's not getting old. It's just a matter of they are starting the signs. And the signs that you might have saw with your grandmother, that could take up to 10 years to get to that situation. So you're not going to see it until it really gets really to a certain circumstance where you feel like, wow, this person has a safety issue too.
Yes.
And then some people do, don't do anything. They recognize, wow, this is, could be a safety issue, but they still go months and months without doing anything for that particular person, knowing that there is a safety issue. And then it becomes a crisis issue. I was speaking to someone yesterday at a particular, I was at an Alzheimer's caregiving event. And this woman had not taken the keys away from her loved one. And we were going over certain circumstances. And I was like, this person shouldn't be driving. You shouldn't be allowing this person to be driving at all. It's not even a matter of them forgetting where they live, but they also can have an accident and they might be vulnerable to hitting someone. And you don't want that crisis either.
Oh, God forbid. You know, I think a lot of it also is that you give someone a teapot because you see that they're boiling water in pots and they keep burning up these pots. And so I remember giving my grandmother a teapot. Why don't you use a tea kettle? Because it'll whistle. She says, I can't stand that noise. That's why I put them in the pot instead. I don't like to use it. I don't like that whistling noise. She didn't know what it was for. I don't know why it keeps doing that.
That's a sign.
I didn't pick it up. I didn't pick up the sign right away.
30 years ago, she knew what that noise was.
Yeah, yeah. In the meantime, she's putting the whole building in danger.
Right. The sound, certain sounds are agitating to them.
Oh.
That could have been it. So it was also agitating her, but she didn't know why she had the sound.
Right. You know, it's interesting that you say that there are certain signs, and I was reading through it and I'm thinking, like, I've seen this, and most people don't know. I don't think most people understand that, because I imagine that people know their parents or their grandparents for many years, and the personality might say the same. And so you might think when they act like this is they do this because they're about to get on my case about something. When in fact, it's because they really don't understand what is happening around them. They're like lost.
Right, right. And so people think, oh, that personality is changing. They're becoming mean or they're crazy. And really, it's because they're developing more and more of a decline of dementia and getting more and more confused.
So what do you think about when people tell someone that they have Alzheimer's dementia? I used to work in a facility with old people, and I just noticed a couple people got diagnosed with dementia, and they were fine because I was their teacher. I was teaching them stuff. And as soon as they knew they had it, they started to act that way.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It was interesting. Do you tell the person that they're a danger to themselves?
Well, when you say they were told they had it, it was because they were given the diagnosis, they had different procedures done, x-rays, whatever, or testing with a neurologist.
And the doctor said, I have dementia. And then they start to behave even worse than they did before.
Well, that could be. But the other thing is the decline. You don't know what, you know, it might be coincidence. Because the one thing about this disease, somebody could be okay in the morning. And then the next morning, you can see a major decline. And then it stays consistent. And then you won't see a decline from that particular phase for a little while. And then it happens again, or it goes back and forth. So it really, really depends on the individual.
You mentioned there's certain kinds of, I'd say, syndromes, like sundown syndrome.
Right. And that's the main one. Wandering and sundowning is really a big one. That was the time, you know, of the day going down. A lot of people get more agitated. They can't tell the difference between night and day. And then they start having hallucinations. So that's why the situation is not black and white. It's so, how should I say, so individualized. That's the best way to put it. It's very individualized. You know, you might have two people that have Alzheimer's, dementia, and they are hallucinating. It's how they're hallucinating, when they're hallucinating. You know, some people might hallucinate in the middle of the night and wake up because they're dreaming and they're really thinking they're seeing certain things that's happening, or certain things might be causing what's happening. You know, maybe something outside, or they had a very busy day and they're dreaming about the birds. So now they think the birds are in the house, you know, or they've been watching the news and now they think what they saw in the news is now happening to them. And this is what happened to somebody that I was actually talking to yesterday. Her husband had been watching CNN and woke up in the middle of the night and thought he was in a war because he had been watching segments about the Ukrainian war. So he thought now the war was in their apartment.
Yeah.
It can be very interesting.
And very, very upsetting and unsettling to the family.
Yes. And that's why you have to be really educated and prepared so that when these things happen, you're prepared that you can say to yourself, oh, this is part of the disease. Let me handle it this way. But if you're waiting till all these things are happening, you're living in the moment. So that's what makes it, you know, very difficult and emotional.
I find that a lot of people talk about dementia with their parents, their grandparents, or loved ones. You use the initial LO. I like that, the way you sort of initialize things.
Right.
So it made it interesting to read, and it made somehow gave it a better flow. But I find that a lot of people talk about others that might just forget something one day, and then they label them as having dementia. It's not what everybody thinks it is. What I appreciated in your book is that you have one, I remember there was in one chapter, you had a list of like things that are dementia, and then on the other side, this is not dementia. You said you forget forgetting your keys is once in a while is not dementia, but forgetting what they do, that's dementia.
Right, right. Or, you know, like speaking to someone today and they have a friend and they were saying that the friend was actually upset because this was the first time that their mother actually asked them the question of, who is your mom? And it was, and they were taken back because they were doing something together. And that was the first time that that person really recognized that his mother did not know that she was his mother. And then it took her within an hour to really put it together and say, oh, yeah, you are my son. But that means that's telling me that she's declining to another level in her dementia. Like tomorrow, she might not have that issue again for maybe another 2 weeks, but it's starting to come. There's a decline coming. And then there's some declines that just happen rapidly. And that's why I always say, you just don't know. But if you read the book and understand what you have done, that if you meet someone or you see certain behaviors, you're not going to be as affected because you understand, wow, this is part of the disease. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to do is educate people beforehand. So, because I like to say to people, if you're a couple, one of you are probably going to have it, and you need to be prepared in your home, and you need to be prepared to know that denial is not an answer, because you're going to have to deal with this as your loved one. And they might, and you're going to have to put a team together because it's not a disease that you can do by yourself.
Yeah, that I know. But it's funny. It sort of gives me reason to pause. And it's a little unsettling when you say, if you're in a couple, it's likely that one of you is going to have Alzheimer's.
Right. Because it's now down to one out of three people.
Wow.
So who knows in 5 years, it might be one out of two. The rate is going up and there's no cure. And our environments haven't truly changed. We don't know what brings this on. We know there's certain aspects of your environment, depression, whether your lifestyle or if you drink, smoke, or, but there's probably things that we don't even recognize yet that will be a trigger for this disease.
I've heard that hearing loss is something that a lot of elders don't address, a lot of people don't address. And I remember reading, I forget where, but it was in something reliable. It said that hearing loss can hasten dementia. And as an LPN, have you ever seen that? Tell me, explain that.
I'm actually working with a woman now in her home that takes her hearing aids out. She does not keep them in. So she knows she has hearing loss, and she'll say, and she has a little bit of dementia right now. She's early stages, but she knows that she needs to put her hearing aids on. Whereas some people, they will go a long time and not know that they need hearing aids. And when you can't hear anything and you've been a hearing person all your life, it becomes depressing, or you start acting out in a different way because you're not hearing what people are saying. And really all you need is a test, you know, a hearing test to see where your hearing level is. And so I think that people don't think of their hearing as part of their annual physical as they get older, and it should be part of your annual physical, you know? And then people who are living with someone, pay attention. How many times did you have to say to someone to go do something because they didn't hear you? Or you're looking at them and you're talking, but they're not responding. They're still in the opposite direction. That's a clue right there. Something else is going on. So people need to be more in tune if they're living with an elderly person or if they're visiting an elderly person. And then also you need to be in tune because there's also early onset Alzheimer's that can start in your late 40s. You know, people usually notice the person they're working with is not very cohesive in doing their work, and there's other things going on. So they might see it before a family member might see it, that, you know, Jim is not doing his work, or he's asking questions that he's never had to ask, or he's asking questions that he should already know, and he's been doing it for a while. So if people are educated across the board, they know, wow, something else is going on. So-and-so is not just having an issue, you know, at work, and they've been doing their job for 10 or 15 years. And now all of a sudden they're seeing a decline in the way they're working. And the only way people will ever know that is because they're educated and they understand, you know, there's a bigger population now with dementia. And we need to be able to recognize that in the workplace or just in a gathering place.
What do you attribute the rise in this disease to? Why is it rising?
I think it's health. I think it has to do with the environment. It has to do with how we're eating. I think there's so many things that's around us now that we didn't have like 50 years ago. And now we have so many things coming at us, you know, a lot more information. And now we have the pandemic. A lot of people have been going to be depressed from that, or they've had the disease that we don't even know that might be a contributing factor to the disease down the road. So that's a wait and see, too. I mean, when you have a million people, I always say to people, when you have a million people that have died, that minimum, that has affected a minimum of 10 people that's still here. So how is that going, personally, how is that going to affect them? Is that going to leave one or two people with depression? Is it affecting them financially that now their environment has changed, the stress level has changed, they're now not taking care of themselves, or they don't have health care? There's so many contributing factors that could be to this disease that we're still not aware of why it's happening. But yes, it is on the rise.
That's very unsettling. I find it depressing, actually. You know, and the reason, because there are a lot of people are in couples, and so you always know when you have this person here. I consider it very important for people that are living alone. My grandmother lived alone. She was a widow, and her children predeceased her. And so she lived alone, And so I didn't notice. I lived not that far. Even though I spoke to her two or three times a week, it seemed like everything was normal, but she was bluffing. And you know how I found out? One day I called her phone number to check on her, and the phone was disconnected. I was like, what? I was shocked. I called someone else in the neighborhood that she lives, so there was no outage or anything. So I rushed down there. I drove all the way to her place, and I found she was there. And that's when I found out, oh, we have a situation here, like really bad. She was actually living in squalor, unnecessarily. Bank account was packed with money, hadn't paid the rent in 3 months.
That's because they lose their timeline and they confuse where they put things and they don't know how to organize things in their mind anymore. So everything, and then they start having, they become paranoid too about certain things and they become hoarders.
Yes, she did become paranoid. Not so much a hoarder. She had a bird, a pet bird, a cockatiel. I have to say, and people kind of laugh a little bit because it's kind of funny. The bird took over her whole apartment. Took over. It was like dive bombing anyone that went near her. A time I had to tame that thing. And then my poor grandmother was just like...
And those type of birds, I've had those birds. They're very smart birds.
Yes, they are.
They're very smart birds. And she probably knew there was something going on with her.
Yeah.
It became her protective person. Well, animal.
animal, yeah. And she loved it, her Ray Ray. She loved her Ray Ray. Beautiful yellow cockatiel, but took over. And I was in danger when I walked in the apartment. The thing wanted to kill me. Anyway, I mean, it's kind of funny, but it's definitely not. But I want to have you back on the show. I have more questions for you about this. This is such a great book. I think that people should read it, especially if you're over 35 years old, because you might have a parent or grandparent that would need some kind of help. How can someone purchase your book? It's Caregiving with Love and Joy. And I'll just tell the audience that when you think about Alzheimer's, you did write something in the book that said that it could turn out to be a very joyful experience. It doesn't have to be miserable to be a caregiver. But I do know it's better for your loved one to be at home. So tell people how they can buy it.
You can buy it on any e-commerce platform, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Books A Million. And if you go to Barnes & Noble and you don't see it on the shelf, they will order it for you. So it's in a lot of different places. There's no excuse. And it is a good read. It's an educational read. I know people like to read love stories and fiction, nonfiction, or they're informational people on certain subject matters. But this is a subject matter that I really believe that everyone should understand, because it's people don't realize they're going to be a caregiver some kind of way in their lifetime. And so this will give you a good read, a nice read. But at the same time, the person that you're caring for with Alzheimer's, you're going to also enjoy them at a lot of times, because they're going to be in a space that you're going to learn more about that person. But if it's your loved one, you're going to learn a lot more about your family history or your friendship. So take advantage of it.
That's what we're going to wrap it up from here, because that is true. And I did enjoy the book. And in reading the book, there was an interesting sense of relief. So I'm going to invite you back, Patricia, because I think that we need to talk to you more about this. I have so many more questions. And so you'll come back. I hope you'll come back for another half hour.
I will. And also it's on audio and Kindle.
Oh, that's good. And Kindle. Audio and Kindle. Caregiving with Love and Joy, everybody. It's the book. It's the read of the month. It's the read of the decade, because it's something that people should know about. At the end of this book, I felt like this book should be something we should all know, like we should all know CPR.
That's a good way of thinking about it. Yes.
It's that important. It's very important. And it's a very interesting read. It's a very smooth read. It's not dry at all. But you're going to get all the, and you can actually, if you have a problem, you can actually go in an index and look it up and it'll be there. So I'll say goodbye to you for now, Patricia.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Toni.
Thank you for coming on the show. And I'll say goodnight to the audience. Thanks for coming to listen. As always, I'll come to you with the most interesting people I can find on the planet. Bye-bye for now.
thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.